We shall give him a splendid welcome when he arrives, a welcome worthy of true Northmen. Until that day, let us eat and drink and make merry, for winter is almost upon us, my friends, and many of us here shall not live to see the spring. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided to rebrand ourselves and relaunch at the same time the game did with a second edition. Each week we bring you a new dose of strategy insight and all-around geeky goodness. A huge thank you to Fantasy Flight Games, George R. Mart, and our patrons and fans. This wouldn't be possible without you. We have huge plans, and this year we get to enact those. We are going to be co-hosting Game of Thrones Nationals. Learn more at agotnationals.com. Also check out the community site at agot.cards, where you can find tons of community content and an event listing system. Hey guys, Will here. Have a little bit of awkward news with this episode. So we've got some announcements right up front. To begin with, we had some audio issues with our first recording, and unfortunately, Jesse's track was completely unable to be salvaged. So I debated a little bit about what exactly to do to try and tackle that with this episode. In the end, I trimmed several things we talked about early and went ahead and left a beginning of a segment with just Scott and I, with Jesse's audio trimmed out to remove some silence there. So if you want to completely skip that episode, I'll give you the timestamp to go ahead to where Jesse rejoins us here in just a moment. But some of the things that were cut, I do want to recap. We talked a little bit about recent FFG previews from later in this Shadow cycle, and I think in general we are all pretty excited to see a few more cards that interact with Shadows mechanically rather than just being a card that has Shadows, kind of like a Scheming Septon, for instance. So we'll see where the rest of that goes. We also spent some time with Jesse talking about the online tournament that he has coming up, the Spider's Web, an Iron Throne tournament. He's got that coming up on July 28th, which is coming up very soon by the time you listen to this. It's going to be pretty sweet. He's running it all online. You can find it hosted by his other show, The Wars to Come. He's got a flight to California on the line here to kind of do some meta cross-pollinating and things. We chatted a bit about decklists and how they're handling disconnects and reconnects. Folks, he's trying to make the best allowance he can for that type of thing. So if I remember correctly now, folks had about a five-minute window to reboot the router, get reconnected to the game, something like that, if they need to. So I think it's going to be really cool. I don't know that we've ever seen this type of online tournament organized before, so I'm really excited to see where that goes in the end. Now, I've also got a couple new announcements or points of interest since this was recorded even, so I'm going to take a little bit of time to jump in here. We have received word finally, officially, from FFG that there is no cut during the melee portion of Gen Con. They're just doing three rounds of Swiss. Last year, there was some extra confusion where they announced at the event that they were only going to do Swiss, but they had prizes for a top cut and an eventual champion in their display case there at the event. There was a lot of back and forth, and I feel like the Gen Con book said something different. it was kind of a mess. This is later than I would have liked to have gotten word back, but we have at least officially gotten word that FFG is not going to play out a cut to a final winner. Now, on the plus side, though, we have stepped in to help make that happen anyway. Myself, Roy, Jesse, Sandy's joining us, Colin Weir's joining us. We're going to go ahead and play out the top 16. So if you're listening to this, you're going to be at Gen Con, you're going to be playing Melee, there is still something to do. So hang around at the end. FFG said they should be able to hand off standings to us pretty easily so we can run out pairings and go from there. Hopefully space will not be an issue for us to handle four tables and go, but we've got some prizes that we've gotten together here in a bit of a rush. So I hope they work out well for everybody. We're doing full sets of the AGOT cards, promos, as well as the White Book Soccer house cards for the top 16. Roy's bringing in a set of New York promos for the top four. Sandy helped us also get a hold of some coasters with the Melee logo that Mike Lamazek was kind enough to do for us. So the top four get those. We're doing up a trophy for the actual winner. I'm also going to throw in free entry to U.S. Nationals for the winner. So we're going to make it as good as we possibly can on such incredibly short notice. So be on the lookout for that. Now, that said, also, U.S. Nationals, Labor Day weekend. So it's going to be September 1st through 3rd. Joust, then Melee, then Rookery on separate days. It's going to be a blast. It would be a huge, huge boon to me if you pre-register so we can get a solid idea of how many folks are going to be attending. So head over to www.agotnationals.com and you can get signed up for the weekend, sign up for the individual events you want to play in, that sort of thing, so that we know. Now, the rest of this episode, Jesse had a really cool topic that he wanted us to talk about the future of the game, and where we saw it going, because we got to, or we have gotten now, to the end of the books. They've been trying to match the cycles to the novels, and we are essentially about to butt up against the end of the published novel information. So he kind of wanted to chat a little bit about where we expect the game to go from here, where we would like the game to go from here, which is not always the same thing, and that type of thing. So I went ahead and left this section in with just Scott and I here at the beginning because I thought we had a little bit of interesting feedback. I'm sorry, Jesse's audio is lost, but he rejoins us here in a little bit, and you can hear from there. So the timestamp for that should be just about the 25-minute mark. So happy listening. Let's go ahead and kick it over to our topic this week. And this one actually is one suggested by our brand new Kingsguard co-host. So why don't you give us the general bird's eye rundown of what you're thinking, and then we'll kind of walk through some of the indications here. Correct. Neither did the CCG for that matter. Well, it kind of defeats part of the portion, but haven't some of the other? Well, no, I was just trying to think if any of the other cycles had really just cleanly broken down with one book per cycle. I was thinking one of them seemed like it was still covering some stuff from a previous, but maybe not. Granted, they could fudge things and split book five into a second cycle, but that just pushes it off. Yeah, yeah. And that may be all I'm thinking of that made it feel like some stuff was kind of stretched out.
Yeah,
I was about to say, I think he might have been the unique with the most versions in first edition.
Well, I mean, you don't have a Barrow box to get yourself a Bob. You'll get a Bob in the Barrow box, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I can't imagine we don't. Okay, so first you said think. Yeah. Like, real-world predictions for the actual cycles, I think there's a good chance that they, rather than, like, restarting or anything, that they, sorry, restarting through the series back at the beginning, I think instead they kind of step sideways and pick out, you know, specific places that they want to flesh out more, or like specific kind of tribal stuff, and kind of push that. So like when you're out of trying to follow this plot, maybe the next cycle they wind up saying, okay, this one is going to flesh out, I don't know, the Marbrand sub-faction for Lannister, and the Velaryon sub-faction for Baratheon, and so on. And maybe play around with like minor houses or different traits that provide a cohesive theme. Yeah. Yeah. Give them the opportunity to reuse those mechanics on characters and things. I mean, that was definitely the case.
What is dead may never
first
die.
Edition, which, you know, had pluses and minuses, where you would have, you know, a couple Shadows cards come out, you know, 3 years after the initial round of Shadow stuff, but you really actually kind of still needed those cards to make it work. So I don't know, Shadows maybe was not the best example for me to pick there, because it can be insular if the cards are designed that way, but regardless, it spread things out. But
what I want to see happen, or we're not doing think. I think they're just going to print characters they want now, and they're not going to think too much about it, to be honest. And
perfect.
And all Greyjoy cards will be House Botley. Yeah, just do different things. I think they'll copy with the mechanic thing, and like, we'll introduce a new mechanic sometimes, or keep a mechanic for a cycle or two. Like, we obviously know Shadows is returning, as we just mentioned. But besides that, I think they're most likely just going to bounce around. There will probably be some other family of cards kind of things, like the non-limited economy this cycle that we're seeing, and the other limited economy that all groups got last cycle, all factions got, rather. They'll probably do some of those. I actually wish they'd do more family of card kind of cards. Netrunner did a lot of them, since you wanted to talk about. Yeah, so it's like a family. So in Netrunner, if there was a type of ice, each faction would get their own little spin on the type of ice throughout a cycle. And they don't do a ton of that now. But I think they should do more, like have families of cards, like everyone gets their own spin on it. The issue with that, when you do it with economy, which is why I think economy was a mistake last time, is that's part of the balancing engine of the game is economy, right? And they fundamentally unbalanced factions based upon how good their economy locations were. If you do those family of cards, like if one faction in general, if the family of cards is with a character or an attachment, then I mean, whatever, they got a bad character or attachment. But if economy, then it's a problem. I mean, I don't agree with that, but I understand what you're saying. On economy, I do, but I think they're they've been a printing economy very bad. I think with other family of cards, I disagree. Like, I think A Dragon Is No Slave and stuff, the way that they printed those is fine. What I do think is they generally, it doesn't seem to be thought about how it's going to interact with future cards. Like, A Dragon Is No Slave was a fine card for a while, but then once Danny came out, the newer Danny, like, it was never taken to effect how ridiculous A Dragon Is No Slave is with that Danny. And if you're going to print cards of recursion, especially, then that is a whole another can of worms. I think a lot of times we, in playtesting probably, or in design, we think about what is cool for the mechanic in general, for the faction, but not how it interacts with each general card for the mechanic, especially the ones that work on the highest power level. So that's my bigger gripe with the family of cards. Like I feel like it was probably meant that we were just going to design family of cards cards, and obviously Tar gets burned, so when they get the recursion one, they'll get a burn recursion, not thinking, oh, we're just going to add terminal to this because of this body and its recurring terminal burn, which is something that I don't think is very positive for the game, even if Targ is not one of the best factions right now.
I think when you're looking at those cycles of cards, which is what that type of thing is generally called in a lot of games, when you have one general template card, like a two cost non-limited plus one gold location for every faction, that type of thing's a cycle. Anyway, what I think is a consideration in spreading those through the whole, here we go using the cycle term for something else, a whole cycle packs, a whole set, if you will, is to get people to buy them. If the whole thing comes out in one pack, I think there's less of that whole that gotta catch them all sort of mentality to get people to buy the entire set. So I think really it's a concession on, you know, a business practicality to do that. Yeah, from like a game perspective, I would be right there with you. I'd rather have them all drop at once so that it doesn't push and pull the meta as hard on a month-to-month basis from like one faction to another. Like, I mean, I'm all for it changing, but that kind of almost rapid-fire swing back and forth, like you illustrated with Slaver's Bay Port, doesn't feel great a lot of times.
I hope you're right, Jesse.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's likely, but I guess maybe that leads to the second part of your question there about where we want it to go. Because you said you hope that's not where they go. Now you've got me super curious where you do actually want them to go. We'll reverse. Yeah. They didn't do the actual White Walkers or the others. I believe there was an old designer journal back at the time that said something along the lines of they didn't feel it was right to make those actual playable cards because still at this point in the novels, which, you know, listeners, you got to remember the game is officially only based on the novels, right? Through just the novels, we don't know what they're up to or what they want. They're this completely alien force. So they didn't want to make them actual characters participating in, you know, intrigue challenges or something. Instead, they gave us plots with the other's trait to represent kind of these outside events. Yeah. They did give us whites, though, which always felt a little weird, but they were cool. I mean, I would almost say if you want to do something like that, or at least like you want them represented heavily in the game, I almost say do something like really crazy with the game. Introduce the White Walkers as their own like ninth faction to the game. They get one faction card. They get like one deluxe box or one cycle's worth of cards or whatever. And like their faction card, also give it some agenda text or give them an agenda to go with it or something that has to be played with it or something. Like, so that they have a totally different outlook or win condition, right? Like, maybe they cannot win by power. They have to deck you out or something like that. Like, that set them totally apart. Oh, yeah. I don't think it's realistic, but I think there are really cool possibilities that you could go down. Wait, you mean we can play the White Walkers in it? Well, Scott, where do you wish they could go then? Where do you want them?
I want them to go to the land of no dupes. No, I want them I think the bigger thing I want is I think to fix the mistakes, right? The 2.0 is a new game and we've made mistakes. I think dupes is a mistake, but I'm not going to go for a full rules change because I doubt that'll happen. But there are mistakes we've made and let's address them, right? So let's address what Flea Bottom is. Let's address what somebody always tells us. So whether... I mean, the restricted list is the ideal thing. And if where we're going design-wise is to a restricted list... that is totally fine with me. They don't seem to want to do it.
I thought you were meaning you want them to go back and do kind of like a revisiting, rebalance that they reprint Flea Bottom, only like now it has bestow 3 on it or something, and you can only use it
for those. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay, okay.
I want them, if they have if they have mistake cards, to fix the mistakes, so we're not going to ban or restrict the cards, but we're going to balance them out, right? So like Annals will have better limitations on it. Broken things like Mace will have maximum 2 or 3 power around. We'll have a limit on Hightower of twice around. This is what I'd like in a dream world. We've made mistakes. We know what they are. We won't design things like that in the future. But also, these are champ cards. We don't want to ban or restrict the champ cards. So let's make them more fair. So if we bestow 3 on Flea Bottom, cool. If we raise the price on Flea Bottom or give it a drawback, cool. If we just go back and change Somebody Always Tells so it doesn't cancel plots, cool. So this way, we're not going to make the restricted list if that's really not what we want. But we also don't want to errata, so this is the catch-up pack, the cards that have been problems. We're going to errata, restrict the old ones, but we prefer, and it'll be a cheaper pack, if you buy this pack that fixes the design issues that came out.
Okay.
This won't happen, but this is what I would like.
What about the flip side? Would you want them to... also, go through and look at, say, King's Hunting Party and, like, print that in a stronger version that's actually playable. Would you want to do that to underpowered cards?
No, maybe you can give Winterfell Archery Range because we want all the champ cards to be more powerful. And whatever. Another one I would do is King in the North. Doesn't have the king trait part anymore. Like, I think if it didn't have the king trait part, it'd be a good card for the game, but as it is, it's an awful card for the game. Yes, because it just makes people want to play it. It basically, so when it first came out, I think on this podcast me and Aaron were both saying how great we thought it is for the game that there's a card basically that blanks all these triggers and stuff, and it's like a no fun type of card. But in general, all it is, it's become a win more card to make people kings. And if your opponent doesn't have a king, they're behind the eight ball. So it's sexist then. So kings or queens, at least, man. At least kings or queens. I mean, the only way Night's Watch can is if they play that wildling attachment.
They can play Mance, the actual neutral Mance, too.
So then now I think it's your turn now, Will, right? To say what you would want to happen. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go ahead and head that direction.
Sure.
What I would want is for FFG to be able to expand into other time periods that have been written about in the books, or, well, rather in other written materials. Like, I don't want them making... Yeah, I don't want them making stuff up about, like, Robert's Rebellion that we don't know details about or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, I want Duncan Egg, or, like, a whole cycle devoted to everything we know about the Dance of Dragons due to the Targ history stuff we've got. Like, that kind of thing. I think that would be
sick. And we just, like, don't... So, like, I think it'd be really cool to make, like, a couple characters out of A World of Ice and Fire, just because, like, I love that. Also, Dalton Greyjoy, the Red Kraken, is a beast.
Ooh. I don't remember him now off the top of my head. Who was he?
So he was a warrior for Greyjoy. They called him the Red Kraken because... in battle, he took like so many arrows and he just kept coming back and slaughtering people. He's one of the first Greyjoys to help overthrow. So, massive fan there. But yeah, I think it'd be cool to visit that stuff. It's just like, it's the licensing issue. Is that right? Or like, what exactly is
yeah,
it? Like,
I mean, yeah, they don't officially have the rights to that stuff the same way, is the way I understand it. Yeah, I know in previous editions they did get the okay to do a bare handful of stuff. You know, there was a Rhaegar Targaryen and a Lyanna Stark in first end. There was an Aegon, the Mad King, rather, that particular one.
Well, aren't they kind of books in the Game of Thrones universe? Characters in the Game of Thrones universe? Because they're talked about just as dead characters. So
I think that's how they got away with those, is what I was going to say.
Yeah, but like, yeah, guess, like, they're right. Like, so, like, I guess they have to be alive during A Song of Ice and Fire. And talked about in the books, like that's what the rights was. Like, I talked about it with someone one time, because like that's why we can't have a John Arryn, even though he's in the books, because he's never fully alive. He's not an alive character.
your comment there, he's never fully alive, makes me think of Monty Python. I'm not quite dead yet.
well, like, we should get a John Arryn, right? Like.
I hope so. I mean, that's
we don't
the
even
other...
have Eliza Aaron yet, or a Sweet Robin, which
that's
I think
the,
is ridiculous.
That's the other thing I'd like to see them do. Like, I'd like to see them wrap up the current deluxe boxes and then drop Aaron on us with its own deluxe box as a fully playable faction, or, you know, even maybe take inspiration from the Netrunner box that did the mini factions. Do them as like a mini faction that has to be played with a specific agenda. Don't give them a faction card, but give them their own like card frames and like identity and stuff, and dump Aaron on us like that. It's obvious they're holding them for some reason at this point, right? Like, if
yes.
Cycle 5 is Book 5, we should have seen them.
I don't think it's obvious they're holding them for some reason. I think it's just an oversight.
No
an
way.
Oversight to not include Lisa Aaron in the Moondor? Like, that stuff is such a huge part of...
There's no way it's an oversight, because we got, like, Klansmen is such a major theme.
Also like, true.
If we get Klansmen, we get House Aaron. Like, that's the deal. Like, they are literally in the same book. They're, like, just as important. Like, the Moondor should be... Because the Moondor was a location in the first edition, right?
Yeah, and in the CCG.
Yes.
Heck, the Yuri was a location in both. In fact, the original CCG Yuri was the inspiration for the Knights of the Hollow Hill agenda.
And not getting a Robin Aaron, like, he is technically, at a certain point, the Warden of the West, so... I mean, the Warden of the East, so we should get him.
The Lord's Declarant, all that. What's his name? Is Perry Harding? Is that the young Falcon that winds up getting betrothed to Sansa? Or at least Littlefinger's talking about betrothing her?
And we should get a Mord.
Yeah!
The jailer. We get a Mord.
Like, what is Game of Thrones without Mord? I mean, he's a man of few words, but still.
But yeah, I agree. I think they have to be holding off for something. I don't know if we'll get like a... I agree with... Well, I'm not sure we're going to get a full faction, but like, I think they're holding them off for some reason.
I mean, I think it would be awesome to just kind of crib what Netrunner did with those mini factions. And
so go into some details with that, because I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't play Netrunner, and I know some of our listeners haven't either.
Yeah. So the thing is, they actually had four of the corp factions, the corporations, but only three of the runner factions. So that didn't come out evenly when you're doing like head-to-head dual deluxe boxes. So the last one they got to you, well, before the end game one, that's, you know, because all of that stuff. But the last regular one wound up having one corporation, and then they hit on the idea of doing three unique runner mini factions. And so by mini faction, I mean they got their own identity, their own unique card templating, their own unique theme. Each one of them, in fact, kind of got a unique kind of special mechanic that nothing else in the game did, and they were upfront in saying that basically 99% of the cards that these factions will ever get is in this box. We might do a couple, you know, here and there down the road for fun, but almost everything is going to be just right here.
Okay.
So I think that, like, that kind of blew my mind when they did that. I thought it was such an interesting, exciting way to add factions to a game. Plus, they were just oozing flavor. I thought Adam is by far my favorite runner in the game. So anybody that knows Netrunner will know what I'm talking about. He's also like totally different from how I play Game of Thrones. He's just like balls to the wall, adrenaline, like rush. But whatever. But I think that would be super cool to do in Thrones. Like, you could do that with like Aaron and maybe like the Free Cities, or like Essos in particular, and like, I don't know, for the last one you could do Frey or Tully or Bolton, like one of those kind of secondary houses that we've gotten cards for in other games, but like really probably deserves to have more to it. I think it could be so cool. So cool.
Yeah. I like that.
I know that Scott has some experience with that since he was a Netrunner guy. What's your thought?
I don't think the system works for Thrones because, we'll have to get more into Netrunner mechanics, but the reason why they were able to do it is because Netrunner's cards work on an influence system, which means that every card in other factions has a certain amount of influence, and that's how much it is dependent to your deck. Well, Thrones, you can't bring cards from other factions unless you have the banner for them. And you can't banner to more than two things without alliance. So that system I don't believe would work.
You don't think
just because the card pool would be too finite?
Like, if they just came out with some cards and a faction card, and you effectively always had to banner something else to them to round them out, I feel like that'd be pretty neddly with the theoretical factions.
I mean, the other thing why I think it'd be bad for Thrones is because we already have enough factions. It's not asymmetrical. We have more than enough factions right now. So I don't see where the benefit comes for.
So why do you think it hurts the game to add another factor, I guess?
Yeah.
I'd like to hear. Like, why do you think we have too many?
If they were mini factions, I don't personally feel they're much different from an agenda, like a new agenda.
Like, why do you think it would hurt the game to have more than that, I guess?
Why do I think it would hurt the game? Well, because simply if we are going to keep printing cards as we are, the normal division is a certain division, and then you're going to have to start printing for these other factions once in a while. So that's going to take away from other cards. Meanwhile, themes aren't getting flushed out fast enough because each pack is only giving 2 cards per house. So you're going to exasperate the issue by printing more cards with a similar issue, if that makes sense.
Even if they're just like a self-contained box only, or 99% only, like Adam and geez, now my brain's
Adam and Sunny and Apex.
I
don't see the benefit of the game.
I would say you are very much a mechanics only player. Then.
As a lore,
like, theme doesn't do a whole lot.
As a
for
lore
you.
Hound, I really like the idea.
So I would make the Aaron thing Stark, like we have Tully as in Stark.
But like, Aaron's aren't bad. But Aaron's. But that thematically doesn't make sense.
Honestly, neither does the Aaron, or sorry, the Tully thing. Exactly. They are a separate great house.
Yeah, Tully is for sure. I mean, at House Aaron, like, there's only 4 wardens. Like, the Eyrie is maybe the most impregnable castle in all of Westeros. And, like, I think they kind of get glanced over, but, like, they are their own powerful. It's just they don't seem as powerful because Jon Arryn is dead and Robyn seems so weak. But, like, I mean,
going to make it a faction, would they have printed the Eyrie and made it a neutral card?
I mean, yeah, that's certainly possible. I mean, we've seen in prior years similar things happen. Like, a couple different times in the history of Thrones, I've seen a neutral Iron Throne card come out. And then once in the CCG, actually maybe twice, they did a cycle of Iron Thrones for every faction. In first edition, we saw a couple different neutral ones, and we saw an in-house one for both Baratheon and Lannister. It's not without precedent by any means.
I don't know.
I think it would have to be done well.
Sure.
But I tend to lean more towards Will here because I personally want more. I want more factions. The only faction that I don't think should exist is Night's Watch.
I agree.
Exactly.
And I'm actually stupid.
I'd rather
have
Tully
problem. Night's Watch faction. Sure. Like, I have a problem with Night's Watch existing for thematic reasons. Like, actual in game wise, like, they balance it out. Like, it's fine. I'm actually a lot more okay with it now than I used to be. But, like, thematically, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, they should not be fighting for the Iron Throne, which is literally the...
that sounds like a fan fiction gone wrong.
Yeah, it would have made way more sense for that faction slot to have been Aaron from the get-go. And honestly, a bunch of the themes they gave Night's Watch could have, ported right over and worked fine for Aaron with minimal justification.
Absolutely. Aaron likes to steal stuff.
I mean, clansmen sure do. Now, I didn't say everything could. A lot of the defense styled stuff. A lot of passive kind of power gain stuff. Even kind of the taxation sort of thing. I think you could make an argument for that, especially with the with them controlling trade up the high road. Kind of little finger at the helm. He's a money guy, so a lot of that could be justified. Stealing,
I would
maybe
be
less so,
super. I would be super excited if we got like a House Aaron special dropped on us with like a 7-drop Littlefinger, who is just like bonkers.
Yeah, buddy.
That would be that'd be great. And like a 3-drop kind of like Robin Aaron, who like a 3 or 4-drop who like, or even like a, maybe like a 6-drop Robin Aaron, who's kind of like King Joffrey. Like his ability is like super linear, but it's cool because it's the Lord or something, right? Like I think it'd be really cool.
Yeah. Make him very similar to the 7-drop Joffrey, only I don't know, instead of kneeling your faction card, you're stealing the moon door to kill people and throw them out. I don't know.
Oh, that would be so amazing. That would make me so happy.
Yeah. I'm all about really upping that flavor stuff. Like, the lore is so rich for Game of Thrones, and I would argue that's a huge chunk of what's kept the game alive for so long. So I say lean into that.
I agree. Yeah, so like obviously I've said it so many times, but like on every podcast I'm on, like I am obsessed with the lore. They've been some of my favorite books forever. It's literally the reason I play the game, outside of the community. I wish they would just like go full head. I mean, you can even tell it in my deck choices. Like, I was obsessed with Clansmen. I'm obsessed with Drowned God. Like, I like theme stuff. Like, I think it's super cool. Like, tribal decks in this game are very cool. And when they work, it makes me very happy. Are you guys there?
Yeah. We are here.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I'm just busy. I'm here with visions of Sugar Plum Aaron's dancing in my head.
I'm just uninterested. I don't see how it adds to the game.
For me. I mean, like, so, like, for you, I definitely get that. I think it adds to the game because I think the hope and the prayer that we get that the game survives longer than first edition is that we take advantage. The Game of Thrones is a worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah.
And so, like, the lore is important, I believe. Like, I think it's weird when people come into the game and they see that Night's Watch is a faction, but House Aaron isn't. Or that, like, I mean, House Tully is actually super popular based on the show, not even based on the books. And House Tully is super sweet in the books. And, like, they don't matter too terribly much. So I think like really leaning into those could, I think it could lead to sales and I think it could lead to helping grow the game.
Yeah. I'm all for growing the game. And I very much agree.
You think the average show watcher even knows what House Aaron is?
Robin like, Aaron of the Moon Door? Lysa? Absolutely.
I mean, maybe not deeply intimately, you know, keeping track of the,
maybe they don't know as much, but like they know if they watch the show that like that's the tie between the Baratheons and the Starks because of Jon. They know that like Hoster married Lysa to Jon. I mean, like
they know that Lysa's Kat's sister.
They know
that
she's
obsessed. Got this already.
They remember her as the crazy lady. But I think the more important thing is that's the average like Game of Thrones watcher. Let's be honest here, guys. We're not picking up the average watcher to play Game of Thrones.
Correct.
Our game.
And
the,
also,
the,
you know
the
why
sort of folks
know
that we are likely to pull in, they're going to know.
Yes. And also, the reason you know why people don't forget House Aaron is because whether I agree with this fact or completely disagree, the most popular character on the show is one Tyrion Lannister. And he was held captive by the Aarons for a large portion of a season. So they remember who he is. They remember the Moon Door. They remember Mord. That's where you meet Bronn, who Bronn is like such a big character in the show. He's very popular. Like, I think they remember all that stuff for sure.
I think so.
Yeah. So, thank you guys for that discussion. I know it wasn't as technical as we'd been recently, but I just thought it was kind of cool to talk about. You know, I assume our next episode will be about Gen Con and things like that, get a little bit more technical, but I just thought it'd be cool to talk about where we think the game's headed and get it from a few different perspectives. So I think these conversations are really interesting and cool. So.
Yeah, it is.
Cool.
I love the thought of the future and the fact that the game still has one at this point. So, not yes, meaning that absolutely. as a jab at more meaning that as you know the game in one form or another has been around for a long time. So, you know, there's always a little bit of that feeling that the train ride's got to come to a stop eventually. But I don't feel that's anytime soon.
I agree. I agree with you.
Okay, well, we've got another little topic that I wanted to hit on. And this one is actually a contest. I'm changing up the giveaway a little bit this week. We're going to go a little bigger, a little better this time. Okay, dear listeners, keep on the lookout because Dogmite Games, who you may recognize as one of the sponsors for U.S. Nationals this year, I'm going to be doing a giveaway of one of their friggin' sweet deck boxes for this contest. So we're up in the ante a little bit. So here is my thought. The thought is another podcast, which, you know, we won't name, but Jesse is probably on it, is, you know, may share a name with an extremely popular agenda. Okay, there's no way to avoid it. It's the worst that comes. The wars to come. I can't even talk. Extremely popular agenda. But you know what there isn't? A white book agenda. There was in First Ed, and frankly, it was a piece of crap. It was terrible. No one played it. There was one in the CCG that was halfway okay, but was pretty outclassed by some of the just insane agendas that came out in the CCG. So I feel like we're missing something. We've got a real void here in podcast name agendas. So I would like listeners to reply on Facebook and submit their version of a dream the white book agenda. So I think it could be fun. We'll leave that open for a bit.
First, yeah. I think you should explain to them what the white book is.
Oh, that's fair. The white book, if you're not familiar with this, only from the TV show or you don't remember it from the novels, the white book is the history logbook of the Kingsguard, the annals of the Kingsguard, if you will, where the names and dates of the various Kingsguard and the Lord Commanders are recorded along with, if I remember correctly, some brief notes on their escapades. Because Jaime has a very poignant moment after he's been named Lord Commander. Sorry, late spoiler alert. A very poignant moment when he is staring at his entry in the White Book and looking at it, I guess maybe kind of how you might look at, say, if your tombstone were already up and it said, you know, Will Lentz.
Well, it actually used to be called the Book of the Brothers, right?
I think
it was the tome.
I think so. And then it got nicknamed the White Book because of the cloaks and everything. But yeah, kind of like keep going.
I think the scene in the book you're talking about, which is one of my favorites, because it just speaks to him and how important it was to him, is when Jamie's reading as he realizes that Barristan stopped to fill out. He updated before he left.
Yeah, I think so. And Jamie,
which was is so weird because you're not supposed to fill yours out, right? Don't the Septons do it at the Great Sept of Baylor?
Now that I'm not sure about. I thought it was on the Lord Commander to write entries for everyone else, and that each Lord Commander.
Maybe it's just the drawings that get done by the Septons.
I'm not 100% certain. I was mainly thinking about how Jamie is looking at his entry and how it's open ended, right? Like it's kind of got the beginning of his career and there's no end, and he kind of has this philosophical moment of like, hey, you know, everybody kind of hates me for some of my past actions and different things, but like my story's not done. Like I could still be the man I want to be. There's still time. And I really liked this.
Oh man, I really wish I could think of that quote right now. Because he's like drinking wine, he's like drunk, and he's like reading the white book. Is that in Feast where like Loras comes in, and like Jamie's thinking, and he's like, "I'll tear the book up, or I'll hack it to pieces, or something before I fill it with lies."
Yeah, I think that sounds right.
No, you're good. No, I do think it's in Feast, and like I like love that section where, because that's like really where a huge arc for Jamie takes off, where he's like really pondering and thinking about like, his past and how his future is not completed, and what's going on with the kingdom at that moment, and Loras, and all. It's just
it's definitely in Feast.
Obviously, I'm a jit.
And now that you've got me thinking about
obviously,
it,
I'm a sucker for Jamie.
Oh, me too. I need to reread Feast. It's been low on my totem pole because it's a real slog, and it doesn't even have the like fun world building that I like in Dance. But now that you got me thinking about it again, I do think the Lord Commander writes it, because when Jamie's thinking about, oh, I won't fill it with lies and stuff, doesn't he think for quite a while, and then he finally adds a super basic no-frills entry for himself, like Jamie Lannister ascended.
You are correct.
Role of Lord Commander, such and such date, or something along those lines. That's just super bare bones factual.
It really breaks my heart that people, and like we'll stop after this. I just like it really breaks my heart that people feel the way they do about Feast, because I like so hardcore disagree. I think it has the best prologue in all of the books. Pate with Old Town, right? That's in Feast.
I mean, a prologue is a very short section on purpose.
I know, but like that is like such a great predecessor. Like Pate and Old Town is amazing. We have the Jamie chapters. Like so, like the Brienne chapters are just abysmal. Like I hate them. But like we get Vic chapters. We get Aereo chapters in Feast. We get Aerys Okart chapter. Like, I don't know. There are a lot of my favorite characters.
And I do like Okart. I mean, we're about to devolve into a whole flavor episode, which is a whole different thing that we probably ought to get like Luke and like Buzz Hannon on for. But I love Okart and kind of narrative foil that he briefly forms with Jamie. But that's a rabbit hole to go down.
Yeah,
I don't think I need to at the moment.
Correct. I'll get lost if we start talking about Vic chapters and Okart chapters. I'll fall off the deep end. So we better stop before we get ahead.
Okay, so let's go back to the contest for just a moment. Then.
We're
going to leave entries. I was defining what the white book is so that listeners have something to work with. So we're going to leave the contest open for a while. This one's going to run a bit longer since this episode's not going to come out till the 20th. We're going to run this through Gen Con. So we're going to close entries on that Monday after Gen Con's done. So I know that's a lot longer than normal, but I also know life is going to get really insane for everybody very soon as Gen Con comes on us. So. That's what we're going to do. I did also want to get people's juices flown a little bit more. So I have a sample agenda I've been kicking around. Okay. And I know It would take a very special chapter pack release to get this in the game, but bear with me. I want to play with things a little bit, right? So here's my theoretical agenda. It's actually going to need a second card. It's going to need an attachment called the White Cloak. Okay, so we'll hit that first and then come back to the agenda. White Cloak is just going to be zero cost. It's going to be terminal. It's going to have a deck limit 7 printed on it. Stealing something else from Netrunner there, basically. So you can have more than the normal 3. Knight character only. Attached character gains, renown, and a power icon. We're going to keep that fairly simple. Then the agenda itself.
They don't gain the King's Guard trait?
Oh, sorry. King's Guard is what I meant to say. Yes.
Okay.
Knight character only gains King's Guard, renown, and a power icon.
Sure.
So then the agenda lets you take those 7 cloaks, and we're going to harken back to the first Ed Maester's Path agenda. You can take those 7 cloaks and start with them on your agenda. And as a reaction, after you win a challenge, you can move a cloak to a knight character that does not already have one. And then as a reaction, kind of an abbreviated Marjorie ability. When a character with a white cloak attachment dies, search your deck for a knight character, put it on the board. Right? The Night's Watch, good grief. The King's Guard always refills its ranks so that there are new members as soon as one falls. So that's the general idea. I'm sure since it was off the top of my head, like right before recording, because I had the idea for this contest at the last minute, I'm sure balance is wildly off, but I like the idea.
I do like the idea a lot. Seems like an agenda that Dark Naj would just bust in like 30 seconds.
Yeah, I agree.
But I like it. Yeah, I think this contest will be cool just to like see people's opinions on designs and things like that. So, what does the contest winner receive?
What do they receive?
A copy of the White Book.
Yeah, I will just mail them a book of blank white paper. No, they get one of the sweet Dogmite deck boxes. We're stepping it up a little for
this. Oh, cool, very cool. Yeah, I think you mentioned that while going, so I'm sorry.
Yep, mentioned that right at the top.
Awesome, very cool. Great idea, Will. That's awesome.
I think it should be fun. Props and slops. I'll lead that off. I'm going to slop Verizon and my unlimited data plan, which it turns out is not unlimited, I discovered tonight. I generally use the Wi-Fi hotspot on my phone when we record because it doesn't seem to drop out as often as the Wi-Fi signal can. And I was informed probably 2/3 of the way through this episode that I have used my hotspot data limit for the month. So that doesn't make sense, but whatever.
Yeah, that's a bummer for sure. I'm going to prop my wife for putting our daughter down tonight while I'm trying to do a podcast in 2 different rooms. And she did not want to go down peaceful tonight. So props to that for her allowing me to bring this wonderful content to you, ladies and gentlemen.
There we go. Teamwork. That's what it's all about.
Scotty, what do you got?
This is my worst section of the show. I don't really have much right now. I think of something, I'll let you know.
All right. Will, you got any more?
I figured you were going to hit a point eventually, Scott, where you were just going to slop dupes just every week. You were just going to say, I slop duplicates, and then just tell us to move on.
I do slop duplicates. That is true. What else? I slop plot cancel.
Yeah, I'm in for that.
Here we go.
I am going to prop ice. It's so good. The card.
Okay, there we go. I was like, what are we, like, we were talking about how it was hot earlier. Are you talking about frozen water?
No, what? Nope. I am propping ice. I am traditionally, if you know me, not a Stark player. Lore wise, I hate the Starks. So I played Stark last weekend. And ice is good. Ice is very fun.
Did you play with Trading with the Cohort? Tell me you played it with Trading with the Cohort.
I did not. I did not.
Dang. Nope. My hopes up at least.
No. Yeah, yeah. No, I just played a pretty straightforward deck. It was just kill everything. It was fun. It was fun.
I mean, there is that cohort deck that's going around, the Alliance cohort deck. Everyone should be playing Lani Alliance cohort stag.
Nico won the regional with this past weekend.
I've been seeing it online a lot.
It sounds super.
So if you want to play a good cohort deck, or just Nico is an amazingly great player, I cannot attest to either one.
Nico is an unbelievable player. Unbelievable player.
I can attest that Nico is a great player. I can't attest to the quality of the deck, because Nico could have just outplayed everyone, and that'd be totally like a reasonable thing to do.
Sometimes those things happen.
But yeah, props to getting through the next week, the next 3 weeks for Gen Con.
Yeah, man, it is coming up on us so fast.
It's like my 1 year anniversary for a lot, like outside of the, like players in the Midwest I met before that, but it's my 1 year anniversary for meeting like almost all the coastal people. Like even some of the other, like you, like yourself and Kristen, I met at Gen Con, Scott, Roy, like Sandy, like this is all our 1 year anniversary. Awesome. So I'm very excited.
I'm super pumped for it. I hear think Luke there's might a play. Greater than zero chance.
I believe I'm building his deck. There you go. So I believe he is playing.
Good to know.
Yeah. As long as the kid and everything's good. I mean, I think he's going to try to play for sure. I don't think he's coming back, but I think he wants to just come and hang out and play some cards at Gen Con since it's in his hometown. So that's good for us.
I mean, I'm excited, it gives him an excuse to hit the after party with us, because you really haven't lived until you've seen Luke karaokeing and dancing to all the single ladies.
Yes. That is very true. That is very true. There's someone else that's not going to get to play at Gen Con, a surprise guest for the after party, because he has to work at Gen Con. Mr. Ryan Jones.
Working at Gen
Con. I'm super excited to see Jonesy.
Who's he working for? Really?
He works for IDW now. He seems very happy. Well, so, he's going to have to work the booth. So if you're a Thrones player, you know Jonesy, go hit up the IDW booth. Looks like he's doing some cool things over there. And then see him at the after party, Casablanca, on Friday night.
That sounds awesome. And speaking of kind of surprise faces, he's not playing Thrones, and I don't know how much after partying he'll be able to do, because wife and kids will be with him, but hopefully he'll stop by for a little bit. Greg Atkinson actually texted me to say he's heading on. So
oh, nice. Very cool.
Come by to hang.
Before you said wife and kids, I thought you were going to say Daryl. And I was like, if Daryl's coming to Gen Con, he better go to the after party.
Believe
he better
me, go. I am talking to Daryl like weekly, saying, hey, dude, you know, there's room in our hotel room. You could, like, it's not even going to be crowded. We've got an air mattress. Like, it's an extended stay, so there's loads of room for you.
Maybe I'll switch to your hotel room. Because the hotel room that I'm staying at is super crowded.
You know, I can touch base with Kristen. We might be able to make that happen. It's downtown. It's in walking distance.
Fine. I'll touch base with her. Cool. Yeah. Well.
Okay.
We will see then.
Well, I. Does that reach us in the danger zone?
I think it might. Overcrowded hotel rooms are definitely.
Correct.